Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm JJ Bull and I'm presenting because Joe is just too busy. He's too darn busy. But someone who Someone who wasn't too darn busy is John the MacDaddy McKenzie. Hello, John.
Hello.
That's good. Are you an impression of me?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. It's fine if you did, because there's someone else in the room who I don't think I do an impression of, and that is Joey D'Urso.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Did you have a nice time today watching the football?
I did, with the TIFO lads. I'm sure a lot of people would pay a lot of money for that experience.
It was... How much do you think they'd pay?
Out of interest.
Yeah.
Probably not very much. But yeah, it was, you know, a little projector, some pizza. It was good vibes. And we saw, well, at least one good match.
Which was the good match?
Well, the latter one.
You'll find that later.
Well, no spoilers.
Because Joey's going to tell us later. We're going to talk about, obviously, the games that happened today. There were two of them, and they were both just lovely. I thought they were two of the best games.
Did you?
No, but I'm just trying to keep the energy up.
Okay.
It's like day 23 of doing these World Cup live streams. They're very fun. Before we go anywhere else, we should say hi to Joey's friend.
Anuj. Hello.
Yes.
Huge fan, honestly. The biggest fan of TIFO. Watches everything.
Well, here's to you, Anuj. Joey's friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't watch so much these days. He's not allowed to watch YouTube in bed anymore. So I have to tell him about it.
Is he in bed at 9 p.m.?
Maybe. I don't know.
And if you like to go to bed at times other than 9 p.m., you should read The Athletic. Or if you're in bed at 9 p.m., because what better things to read than The Athletic at 9 p.m.? You can read...
My
brilliant
stuff.
Journalism by the likes of Joey D'Urso. What's the last thing you wrote, Joey?
Oh, it was a piece about gambling at the World Cup, of which there is a lot, particularly as the USA is opening to sports betting, which of course is exciting for a lot of people, but also brings kind of risks. In the UK, there are lots of problems relating to gambling, so it's an interesting topic. And in, you know, all around the world, the sort of gambling is booming. That's really interesting. I'm looking a lot into cryptocurrency and football, which is kind of my specialist subject.
Yes, you do
done
talk about cryptocurrency.
Done a TIFO video. About that a while ago. Looking at all sorts of things. It's kind of a bit quieter than normal for me, which is I'm quite enjoying.
Well, there's normally just so much delicious content you can't even eat it all. But Joey's on there, so you can read lots of Joey's work, and I recommend that you do, because if he wasn't here, I would say how good it is, but he is here, and I'll say, it's fine. It's really good. So you should read Joey's work and everyone else's work in The Athletic. And if you would like to do that, well, you can do that by going to theathletic.com/TIFO, and then you get an offer, which is 6 months for £1 a month. That's the offer. It's going to be really good. So definitely do that. That'd be wonderful. And then, yes, so we're going to talk about the two games, all the other football stuff, Cristiano Ronaldo. It's going to be a lovely time. So here we go. I'm going to leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace of Portugal. Yes, so the first game we're going to talk about should probably be the one that just happened, and that was Portugal 23-1 Switzerland. Actual score 6-1.
Yeah, I think I wandered off at one point and it had gone up to another goal. And normally you expect a bit of a whoop when a goal goes in, but it was so routine by that point, there was no whoop.
It's good that I noticed you walked away because we were relying on you.
I just got a glass of water, yeah.
For the analysis, because I mean,
yeah, Ramos, what about...
So it's only 5-1 as far as Joey's concerned.
Yeah.
So
yes,
we have
exactly.
To get that goal. Yeah.
Well, obviously, I mean, that's a huge result for Portugal. They go through to the quarterfinals now. I don't think anyone really expected this result. But the big news, we can start with it, because it's probably the overarching kind of story for it, John, is that Ronaldo was dropped for the game. Was it disciplinary reasons? Was it because he's not as good anymore?
I believe it was for disciplinary reasons, but I'm not entirely sure of the details of those.
So. Yeah. I don't think anyone knows. It's a bit of both, it seems like.
Yeah.
Whoever you want to look at it, they took him out and they immediately scored more goals than anyone else in the World Cup so far. And his replacement, Gonzalo Ramos, scored a hat-trick. The youngest player to score a hat-trick for 60 years in the World Cup. Wow. It's quite good, isn't it? So, John, are Portugal better without Ronaldo in the team?
I think yes is the answer to that question. I don't think it's hugely controversial, though, that a player who's, what, the same age as me, isn't he? So 37. He's just about to probably sign a contract in Saudi Arabia. That guy is not the best player in the world anymore. Is not a huge news story, I don't think. But we've been talking about this topic a lot in the last couple of seasons or so, because obviously it's not only about the decline and fall of Cristiano Ronaldo, it's also about how do you solve a problem like Manchester United. And yeah, these debates have raged on and on and on. But it was just really interesting for me tonight watching Portugal with an actual presence in the nine slot. And we talk a lot about how you expect your number nines to do various things. And we just saw a lot of that from Ramos, a player I've not really seen too much of, but really enjoyed watching tonight. So obviously gets a hat trick and gets a hat trick of different goals as well. So you have the first goal. So he picks the ball up, just a pass through into the box, takes it past the defender, swivels, and then clacks it into the top corner.
So the near post that he absolutely thumps in. That was some goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that one of those angles where you see it kind of, it was the reverse of the thing where it goes out and you think it might be in. It was like, I thought it had gone out because it was such a crazy angle. And then I saw they had actually scored it.
Hmm. So already sort of get the ball quick out of your feet and then get the shot away and score in that way. Then obviously there was the Dalot ball in from wide angle, plays it to the front post, and Ramos is running, gets in front of his defender and plays it into the bottom corner. So another sort of nice movement goal. So what you're wanting your nine to do. And then the final one, just a through ball that he runs onto and then dinks it over the goalkeeper into the goal. So three goals that you want your number nine to be at least generating those sorts of chances, but scoring them is even better. So yeah, it just made a huge difference to the way that Portugal were playing. Obviously that we could talk about the off ball stuff as well, but we know that there's been questions about Cristiano Ronaldo's pressing, and again, having a younger, fitter player in that central spot for your press is really important too. So in every area, he made a big difference.
I mean, I'm not saying that his legs are gone, but sometimes I notice
there was that
at some
pass
point
at the end that he didn't quite run onto.
Yes, well, this is the thing. Everyone, if you're not of mid-30s age, what you'll... it's still in my 30s. What you'll have noticed at some point is that you're not as fast as you once were. It just happens all of a sudden. Are you in your... How old are you, Joe?
I'm
you're
30.
Younger. You're 30, right. Are you still
you
really fast?
You experience this then, yeah.
I'm not really on speed. I've noticed it's, you know, kind of... You have to eat a bit healthier and exercise a bit more.
Yeah. Well...
I don't know, I don't sprint very often.
Well, this is the thing.
Maybe
I mean, what are you running away from?
Yeah. Yeah. For buses sometimes.
That's good, yeah. Do you ever catch them?
That's about it. No. I've given up now, just walk.
That's good. This is solid. So Joey's chasing buses. Have you ever seen him running? That's what he's doing. He's chasing buses around. Not to get on them,
just to keep me fit.
To get rid of them. Yeah. There's something wrong with those buses. So that's one thing. But one thing that does happen is that you definitely stop being quite as quick to accelerate and to sprint. And like I said, he kind of saw it in that one run. But he's very important to Portugal, and he has been playing in the rest of their games so far. What have you made of Portugal up till this point? Because obviously very impressive today, but did you see this result come in before? I mean, what you watched of them in the World Cup, Joey?
No, not really. I mean, they sort of, they didn't make great waves in their group stage. They sort of beat Ghana, didn't they? They beat Uruguay and lost to South Korea. I didn't think they particularly pulled up any trees there. You know, if you look at the depth in their squad, there are a lot of very big names. But I think people certainly weren't talking about them in the bracket of the very, very favourites for this tournament. But now I think they've got to be, really. I mean, Switzerland are... I feel like Jan Sommer is this familiar face from so many tournaments of always being in these quite... Switzerland kind of always overperform a bit, don't they? They beat France on penalty. Did they lose against Spain in the Euros last time? They're always kind of doing quite well, and they just got absolutely blown away today. I can't recall ever seeing Switzerland blown away. Maybe I'm missing something, but it was an amazing performance, I thought.
Well, that's one of the things. Switzerland, correct me if I'm wrong, John, are one of the better defensive sides that are in the tournament. They're not very exciting really to watch, but they tend to be able to lock things down and get through. But then what did Portugal do that managed to... What did they do?
Well, it was an interesting game because... ahead of this game, Murat Yakin, the Switzerland man, sorry, miles away from my mic, I'm not able to move my chair around. The Switzerland manager changed up the system that they were playing. They'd been playing a sort of 4-2-3-1 system before this, but they came out in something closer to a 5-2-1-2, as I've got it on the board in front of me. And it's sort of hard to know exactly why they came out in this system, because I think it does match up very nicely to what Portugal's shape has been this tournament. So you've got a centre back who can mark the striker, and then you've got two sort of wide players either side of them, but they play quite narrow, so that matches up to the front three. You've got a number 10, so you've got a player who can drop on there, two eights as well, so you're mirroring pretty much everywhere here.
And the system wouldn't change with Ronaldo in or out, so like when they thought he might not be in the team, Ramos should be taking up the same sort of positions from the defensive line, wouldn't he, and attacking as well?
I think so, yeah. And I mean, the other thing that Portugal have been doing is they've been playing a 4-4-2 diamond shape. So again, quite narrow, but they may have been thinking of using that kind of shape if they brought Ronaldo in from the start. But they have been playing this pretty much through the tournament, and everyone will say, you know, there's a lot of fluidity in these four players here. So Otavio. Not so much the nine maybe, but then the two wide players. So any of these players can really interchange if you want. So Felix can play as a 10, Otavio can push out to the left-hand side. Fernandez sometimes comes into the middle as well. So you might see Otavio over on the right as well, but lots of fluidity there. And I think that's where this sort of system that Switzerland were playing starts to break down, because not only do you have this, the thing for me is this massive gap in between the fullbacks and the wing backs on for either side. So on the one hand, this means that in possession, Portugal can push, if they want, push their fullbacks really high up without really losing anything. But the other thing is that if they are in possession and they sit deeper, then that's going to pull these wing backs further up the field and then generate space in wider areas, in the fullback areas for Portugal to expand into and stuff. So it wouldn't be surprising to see Felix here just pushing out wide. A little bit of fluidity of movement here, and before you know it, you know, you've got the ball in a wide area, you can get the ball into the box, no problem. And it felt as though this sort of thing was happening quite regularly in the game. It felt as though the flexibility of the Portuguese players was able to just find spaces in that particularly back three area. And it just felt as though Portugal were constantly causing problems to the Swiss back line because of that. So I don't really understand why Yakin went with that approach, and obviously as the game went on and it started getting further and further out of the Swiss hands, they switched back to a sort of 4-4-2, 4-4-2-3-1 shape, and they had a lot more success with that, but by that point the game had gone. So
he was chasing it, or was he maybe at some point going, let's just stop this and get everyone a go?
Yeah, I don't know, because obviously we went into this game thinking it was going to be a really low-scoring affair.
I thought it'd be 0-0.
Yeah, exactly. None of us thought that there was going to be a lot of goals. So it could potentially have just been a way of thinking, well, at least we can keep them pegged. But it just didn't work. And I think the issue then was, as soon as it didn't work, it took Yakin far too long to switch things back to a system that had functioned for them. And by that point, they were already four goals down pretty much.
Joey, did you watch Gonçalo Ramos closely?
Before today?
I don't know.
No, I'd heard the name, but I knew very little about him. I mean, he's announced himself to the world, hasn't he? I mean, what's the stat? He's now scored more World Cup knockout games than Cristiano Ronaldo, which is a lot of fun. I mean,
is that right?
Yeah.
Because Ronaldo must have 2-1. Is that right? He's got one?
Yeah.
I don't think he's ever scored one, actually.
Is that right?
Oh, my God.
Because I think Pepe has scored 2 World Cup knockout goals, and I don't think Ronaldo scored any as well. So there's another interesting stat.
Well, there's one for Ramos, or rather 3 for Ramos. In case you didn't know who he was, I'll tell you. He's a striker who plays for Benfica, and he couldn't get in the team for a couple of years ago because he was a boy at Liverpool, Darwin Nunez.
Yes.
He had the forward position, so Ramos was waiting in the shadows to overtake him and come out. He's really good. I thought he was going to sign for a couple of teams in the Premier League. There's actually videos that were never released on Tifo IRL about where Ramos would fit into certain clubs I was sure he was going to.
Get the tape.
Because of journalism.
Release the tapes.
Yeah. So there you go. He's really good though. He's just a striker. I don't think he's going to be like a 25 goal a season player, but he looks to me very much like, I think I said to you, John, a bit like Alvaro Morata, not in style, but in that for some teams he'll score 15 a season, for some he'll be 20, then he'll be 12. But he'll go to good big clubs, I think, and you know those players who get like 36 games but score 13 goals or 14 goals, when what you want is someone who scores
20,
yeah. But they're very rare.
They're not very many of them, are there?
No. He looks good though. I thought he was good. Mm. And he has 3 goals, which is nice for him. Did anyone else stand out for you in that Portugal side today? Are they going to play a similar system, you think, in the next game? Will Ronaldo start the next game, basically?
Surely not, you'd think. It would be hard for them to...
You'd think it'd be hard to play him now, wouldn't you?
But I've been really impressed. I was really impressed with the way they played today, but I've been really impressed with their forward players anyway. So João Felix, obviously a lot better in the international game because he's not having to play under the relentless yoke of Diego Simeone. But even Otavio, I mean, the great thing about this game is that just the World Cup is all about just average punters coming up against players they've never seen before and then being like, oh, this guy's great. And I've not really watched much of Gonçalo Ramos either, or Otávio as well, who's also playing in Portugal. And I've just been really impressed with both of them. We all know about João Félix. We all know about Bruno Fernandes. But I love just having a game this high profile and being like, oh, great. You know, this is a player that I've not really seen much of, and you get to see them playing and everyone discovering them at the same time.
It's something different to watching like a Champions League game, isn't it? Because it feels more, I don't know, because you feel like more people are watching it on TV at the same time. You know how when you, like, say I was sitting at home and then I'm trying to work out what to watch on TV. I'm like, I don't want to watch Home Alone. I don't really fancy that just now on Netflix or whatever. But if it's on TV, I'll watch it because it's on TV, even though it's halfway through. Because there's something about it being on TV that makes it feel more like you're having a shared moment watching Home Alone.
And it's on like terrestrial TV. It's on in every pub you walk into. It's like people who aren't that into Portuguese or Swiss or Home Alone. Like people will be talking about that goal tomorrow who wouldn't be talking about sort of Porto in the Champions League second round or whatever.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is.
It's called the biggest stage of football, right? And a part of me kind of finds that funny because like the Champions League is obviously more important, I think, for most football fans. But it is the biggest stage in the sense of exposure. Like you're saying, everyone knows who Gonçalo Ramos is now. And that means that, you know, people will be talking about him in offices. He will just be a known entity now forever, right?
Yeah. 20 million extra on the price tag. Hmm. Well, does that not happen anymore? Because everyone's got so much data.
I think, we talked about this yesterday, was it? So our theory is, my theory anyway, I can't talk for you possibly, John, but like scouts and analysts, they know who all these players are. Like they know who Gonçalo Ramos is. They've seen him play for Benfica a lot of times. They also have data that would put him, they'd put in a model and this like computer would come up with something that tells you that if he went to the Premier League, he'd be this good. And they give you actual numbers to tell you how good they are. But the thing is, sometimes you can't quantify, or I think that's probably the right word I'm looking for, how good someone is when they're playing different situations and a different pressure with different players. Like you don't know how that guy's going to react off Ronaldo. You don't know how he's going to bounce off someone like Bruno Fernandes playing that kind of passes to him because he's only played in certain systems with certain players. So I think some players, you think they're getting better with age. Like I was talking about, it was Moises Caicedo, Ecuador, really good player, really highly rated. He's a very good midfielder. And you think, well, when he's 26 or 7, he'll be an amazing player. I think he won't be that much different to how he is now. It's just that he'll be playing with better players because he's done it for a couple of years. People are like, oh, I'll have a risk in him now. And so he'll look like a much better player because he's surrounded by, where's he going to go? I don't know. Make up a team. Arsenal, Liverpool, one of those, right? So he goes there and suddenly he's surrounded by even better players than what Brighton have. And then he looks like a better player. Does that make sense? Am I right?
I think that does make sense.
Yes, good. I'm right. And that's the most important thing of all. What else are we talking about with Portugal? Pepe scored. He's still playing.
Unbelievable, isn't it? At the age of, what was he, 39? Is he
39.
409, I think.
I mean, he's 2 years older than us, JJ.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's depressing, isn't it?
What were you doing at 2 years from now?
At my age, yeah, Mozart had been dead for 5 years or something. Yeah, that's depressing also.
Yeah, we're sitting on the sofa eating cheeseburgers while we watched the football on TV. That's what we did. They were very nice, though.
It was.
The footballs we're talking about. Portugal, are they going to win the World Cup now, Joey?
I think they could. I went to...
Just stick your neck out too much.
They can win the World Cup. Yes, they will win the World Cup.
Okay.
There you go, clip it. Embarrass me when they get battered in the next round by Morocco. Is that Morocco? That's right, isn't it?
Yes.
See, I mean, that's a favourable draw, isn't it? Like, even though Morocco have obviously done very well, part of the quarterfinals to play England or France. I went to Lisbon a few weeks ago and I actually did a piece for The Athletic on Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yes, you did. What were you doing in Lisbon? So was it you went there to do a piece on Ronaldo?
No, I went there to speak at an event called Web Summit about cryptocurrency and football and why I think it's generally a very bad thing. And I gave a speech about that and spoke on a couple of other panels as well.
Yeah.
And while I was there, I thought, you know, why not write about this big story of Portugal and Ronaldo and the sort of relationship between, because it was a funny time when I went, because it was before the famous interview with Piers Morgan. It was when basically in this country, Cristiano Ronaldo's reputation had got pretty, you know, it wasn't working at Manchester United. Ten Hag had dropped him, but in Portugal, it hadn't quite reached that point yet. And people were a bit sort of, you know, oh, we know he's a bit, you know, he's a bit of trouble, but we think he's got that special thing going on. And then I think with that interview, he really lowered his reputation in Portugal.
Is that right? In Portugal as well?
Yeah. And there was actually a poll in the Portuguese press. I mean, I don't know the exact reliability of this particular poll, but that said that 70% of Portuguese people wanted him to be benched today. So I think his stature as this icon of Portuguese football has been, you know, he will still be probably the best Portuguese player ever, but his star has been somewhat faded by the events of the last few weeks, I think.
Yeah, it's been an odd year. When you're talking about the cryptocurrency bits and pieces that you're doing there, could you, because obviously it's quite a wide subject and yes. We don't have another hour to do.
No, there's a video on TV, I believe, about fan tokens, which...
Yes. Yeah. Socials are called, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fan tokens, yeah. So what was it you were doing talking to in this fan convention? What did you say? Why is it bad, this cryptocurrency stuff?
Bear
in mind,
bad?
We are live on a stream.
Yeah, I'll choose my words carefully. I think it's bad because I think it's a way to transfer money from football fans, who are generally not especially well-off people, to very rich people, like the people who run these big companies, like people who run football clubs, like professional footballers who have huge salaries. People buy these tokens, which don't really do anything, and have in many cases crashed in value. Lots of them in places like Turkey, where people generally have less money than they do in places like the UK and European countries. And this money lines the pockets of wealthy European football club people. So that's what I think is essentially going on, past lots of complex technology and fancy words. And I think it's a bit of a scandal in plain sight. And football is at fault for a large part of that, or big football clubs are.
And if people wanted to find out more about that, they can follow you on Twitter, and your articles in The Athletic, I suppose, would be a good place to go.
Yes, that would be a good place to start.
Remember, /TIFO.
We've seen a lot of crypto adverts on billboards at the World Cup, but there's suggestions that cryptocurrency is not long for this world. So what's your general take on that? Is that just a...
Yeah, I mean, so there's crypto.com, which is this sort of slightly mysterious cryptocurrency exchange, which started throwing huge sums of money at sport. The arena in Los Angeles was for a long time the Staples Center, named after a household stationery firm, and is now named after a crypto exchange. That has its adverts all over the World Cup, but that firm is under serious pressure at the moment. This big crypto exchange called FTX, you've probably seen the guy with his baggy shorts and crazy hair, who is under, you know, that whole thing has gone completely belly up and people have lost their money. That hasn't happened to crypto.com yet, but it could happen at any point. The whole industry is kind of tanking, and it looks pretty bad, I think, to have that plastered all over the World Cup where people from all around the world are watching.
So the problem with hosting is that I have to pay attention all the time.
Sorry, I'll just keep talking about...
Well, normally I'm looking at what the next thing to do is.
And about my crypto, which I'm planning to launch on this live stream.
Are you? I was thinking it'd be quite funny to do one. I shouldn't tell that, actually, because it'd be funny to do it as a video one day. Yes, so that's something. That's something.
By the JJ coin.
No, I don't want to do that. I don't fully understand enough about it to possibly talk about it confidently on the live stream, which I was just hoping to lean on you, and then I could sort of look at the chat for a bit and maybe come up with our next topic. And while I come up with our next topic, you know what we should do? Have a break.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And we're back from the break. Oh, do you feel nice after the break? Yes.
Yeah, is it actually a break?
Yes, that was the break. We've done it. We're back now.
Cool. Yeah, I enjoyed that, yeah.
It was good. So
a few minutes to sort of get in the zone. And yeah, I'm happy.
Okay, well, that was it. That was the break done. So the first game, obviously, was Portugal. The next game was Morocco 0, Spain 0. But it was 3-0 on penalties, wasn't it?
4-1.
4-1 on penalties. Sorry, I've got that wrong. That's what it was. If we're counting the game in passes, it would be Morocco 305, Spain 1,019.
Wow. It's almost Japan-Spain-esque.
Well, it was two teams with a very different approach to the game. I just published a video on TIFO IRL before we record this live stream, so you can see that on TIFO IRL on YouTube if you want to go and have a look. I've done that one. But John told me two things that he noticed after I'd done the video that I didn't include. So, John, what did you make of this game? How did Morocco beat Spain?
Yeah, so in your video, you talked about how Morocco sat in a fairly low block. I had them down as like playing a 4-1-4-1. And then essentially they were just dropping quite narrow in this midfield line here, with the two wide players actually dropping in alongside the number eights, and then Amrabat, who has had an incredible tournament as the defensive midfielder in the middle there.
Yes, we should talk about him a little bit first, shouldn't we, so we're going to fully into what they do. What does he do differently to other people in his position?
I don't think he necessarily does things differently, but he is playing a role that maybe we don't see so much at the highest level of elite football, which is a purely defensive number six or four or whatever you want to call them. Yeah. And he was just really, really remarkable in the whole tournament so far, insofar as he's just really good at ball winning, getting the ball under control, and then recycling it to his teammates so that they can get it forward quickly. So the idea is that they're going to sit deep, they're going to absorb pressure, and then they've got these really exciting players in Boufal and Ziyech in the wide positions, and then you've got Mazraoui and Hakimi, so two of the best fullbacks / wingbacks in world football, and you've got El Nesri as well. I think that's wrong. That is wrong, isn't it?
I may have spelled his name wrong, yeah.
Okay. But he's sort of like a really good hold-up striker, really good back to goal. And so you have this team who can absorb pressure from teams who are holding possession and then break at speed to be able to get forward and generate all of these problems. And yeah, the things that I noticed that they did really well is just maintaining the tempo. So obviously Spain, as you mentioned, sort of died the death of 1,000 passes. We know that Spain are going to...
1,019 passes.
1,019, yeah. So we know that Spain are going to look to possess the ball, but actually the difference between these two teams in terms of tempo was really noticeable for me.
Like what? Like possess the ball.
That's right, yeah. They want to hold it under their spell. Okay. But yeah, Spain are all about retaining possession of the ball and then moving the ball down the field, retaining that possession all the way and then trying to generate a chance from those sorts of situations. But this worked really well in Morocco's favor, I think, because Morocco are going to attack at speed, and if they lose the ball in the opposition half, because Spain are going to try and retain possession and get it under control, and it's all about control, this system, they have time to then fall back into their block again. And I felt as though the tempo that Morocco are using to get forward was not being matched by Spain trying to get the ball back in behind. So you just have this sort of cat and mouse game of one team going into the opposition half. If they lose the ball, falling back into this block and being able to actually stop Spain from really causing any problems at all. So, yeah.
And then the thing with Morocco is that they're actually, like, you think of them as, how do I word this without sounding bad? You think of them as being Morocco, they're not going to be very good. They're going to have all right players. They'll be one of these teams that does quite well and gets knocked out eventually, like quite early on in the tournament. It's what you kind of maybe have in your, I can't think of the words I'm trying to say are, but you know, that's what you might think of them. That's maybe your just view. What am I saying?
Preconception.
Yes, exactly. Thank you very much. Thank you for the help there. It's all that spooky possession. I've been taken over by someone who can't talk properly. And so what Morocco do actually have, like you're saying, Hakimi, Mazraoui are two very, very good fullbacks. Then what you've got is Aguerd, who is a really expensive signing for West Ham. So he's playing Premier League, probably the top rated league in the entire world. And Saïss also plays in the Premier League still, doesn't he? Has he moved?
Has he moved to Turkey?
Well, he was at Wolves anyway. Yeah. So it's a good, at least one good quality centre back. Those two were excellent, I thought, in this game. And then you've got Amrabat, who's come out as one of the stars of the World Cup so far, I'd say. And then Boufal and Ziyech have all this skill and creativity and genuine like work rate defensively. They're doing a lot of running, those two. And what I notice is when they break, it's very easy for someone to fire a ball up the line to someone like Ziyech and for him to then knock out for a throw-in or something like that, and you know, or not struggle to keep it. But he finds a little way to take a one touch and then flick it inside so the move keeps going. So those two facilitate those breaks so cleverly because they're great players. Mm. That's one thing Japan had when they got the ball and they're breaking. They had to keep going in a straight line always. But what these guys are doing is they're getting the ball up to them quickly and they're doing something smart that keeps these moves flowing. And then that you say, Enesri and the two other midfielders are quite functional and they just fill the gaps that you need in that team. And like one of the things they do, I noticed in this game, is that they're amazing off the ball while Spain are amazing on the ball. I don't know, what do you think of Morocco, Joey?
Yeah, I've been impressed by them. I think, you know, they haven't conceded. They've conceded one goal, which was an own goal. I mean, I think anyone's going to find them hard to break down. Yeah. Which is a pretty amazing achievement, isn't it?
You tell me.
Yeah, I'm amazed by that achievement.
Did you think they'd be this good?
No, absolutely not. Although I do have them in a sweepstake, which I've organised myself, and someone suggested it might be corrupt, but if it was corrupt, it would have to be me rigging the World Cup rather than the sweepstake, because you would never have guessed that Morocco would be this good.
And as a man who often goes after the corrupt within yeah. of the world,
that's... He's exactly the sort of person you'd expect.
You'd never expect Joey Dersel to be the one who gets away with it.
I think think the pot is £50, so the stakes aren't huge, but they're substantial.
And when you say you've done this yourself, is this in your own house you've done the sweepstakes?
No, with 31 other friends and friends of friends and friends of friends of friends, yeah. Oh,
okay.
How does the £50 divvy out? Like, how far do you need Morocco to go before you're in the
I
money?
I think you're giving like 10 quid if they get to a semi, maybe.
Ooh.
Yeah. It might be more than that. I think it's 70. I don't know. I organised it. It's written down somewhere.
Are you expecting that money to arrive in your bank account any day soon?
No, I'm not. I think they'll lose to Portugal. But
why do you think that?
Because I just thought Portugal were brilliant in attack today. I mean, I think they really started clicking. I thought João Félix was fantastic. I mean, there's one moment which jumped out to me was where he just sort of ran with skip with the ball past about three players and then, you know, no, it didn't lead to a goal. But it's just, reflecting on my trip to Lisbon, are some of these players stepping out of the long shadow of Ronaldo, which I think is one of those kind of intangible things that I think it's real, you know. I think if you're a young Portuguese attacker, you've this guy's like a god to you, you know. I think Ramos was 2 or 3 years old when Ronaldo made his international debut. He's known nothing else than a Portuguese team with Ronaldo in it. That must be kind of intimidating, or players like Felix as well.
That's an interesting point, actually, about Felix going past players, because when you look at how Spain took on the team they lost to earlier, who was it?
Japan.
Like, what? No. Morocco. Yeah, Spain losing to Morocco in that game that we're talking about right now.
Thank you.
My word, needs to pay attention a bit more. So, like, Portugal have Felix being able to go past players. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm back in the game now. We're back. We're all fine. So, João Felix is able to run past players, and that's what makes a difference. If you're playing against someone who's defensively solid, if you've got a player, you can go past someone, that's really useful. And we saw it late on in the Spain game that Nico Williams came on and John Hartson was saying, oh, he's done really well. But he did well because they're getting a bit tired, and he was playing on the outside, able to run past people at that late stage of the game. And that's what made a real difference to them in the closing stages of the match. But they didn't really have that for most of the game. And so, like you're saying, Portugal were really good in attack, and so that's why maybe they looked like the favourites against Morocco. But I thought Spain were absolutely brilliant. I mean, they tore one of the teams apart, wasn't it? Like
Costa Rica.
5-0, 7-0, there we go.
Hmm.
And they're playing really quick football. But I think what I've noticed after seeing the Brazil game is that where Spain lacked a bit of incisiveness, Brazil definitely had that. Where Spain maybe don't play with penetration. Is that what's holding them up?
I think it's really interesting because, like, when you're coming up against a low block like this, the thing you've got to do is you've got to cause the opposition structural problems. And I don't think Spain managed to do that really at all, because they are so structured. They are so functional in a lot of respects. So in the game today, we saw, obviously, Spain playing in this sort of classic positional play way where you're trying to get your five players in your forward line, attacking the space between the opposition defenders, and then everyone else pushes up. So you're in this sort of structure here. And what I noticed was that the only real attempt that they had to break down the structure was in the area on the left hand side. So you've got Dani Olmo here and
he says here, he means on the tactics board. You can watch the live stream, you see.
You have Dani Olmo on the left-hand side of the pitch here. And what's going to happen is they're going to do this rotation where Olmo pulls inside and Alba goes forward. And the idea there is that you're going to try and cause some kind of problems between the Morocco fullback and the Morocco wide player here. Actually, what I thought they did really well, Morocco, is that they were just really disciplined in making sure they always had these two players in the coverage in the two wide areas. So Hakimi and Ziyech on one side and then Mazraoui and Boufal on the other. And what you have to do if you're playing a team who's going to block low like this, we saw England doing it a little bit against Senegal, although they were a little bit more aggressive in their pressing, is that you've got to have these rotations where you're trying to pull these players out of position to then generate space that you can then attack. And I thought, the Morocco were just really excellent in just keeping that structure here, making sure that their wide players were always behind the ball so that they weren't allowing any space in those wide areas. They pushed out with their eights quite a lot in the press. So usually if the ball goes to a fullback here, you might expect your winger to push up on the fullback. But actually we saw the eights coming in. And again, that was because they didn't want to have their wide players in Ziyech and Boufal pulled out of position as well. So just a really, really structured block. And the big question is going to be, can Portugal be more creative in the way that they break that down? And I think they probably can, because I think what we saw in the game tonight was that, as we said, they've got those four players in their forward unit who are quite flexible. They can move around. They can pull players apart. They can generate space. And that's, for me, going to be the really interesting question about that quarterfinal is what difference will it make Portugal playing not in this really structured positional way that Spain play, but in this more free-flowing, fluid Portuguese style.
And you know what it reminded me of? When we were playing very well in that last five-a-side, when we're keeping the diamond structure. And we're always going back in, making sure that we're passing on the men who are running past us. That's what it was. I think it was all that. Just five-a-side, solid discipline. What formation do you play in five-a-side when you play, Joey?
Oh, God. Last time I played five-a-side, I ended up going to the hospital because I thought I'd broken my foot, and it was just like, it was very embarrassing to have an x-ray, and they're just like, you'll be fine, take some paracetamol.
Wasn't part of a really elaborate dive, was it?
Yeah, no. Had to really follow through on it. I haven't played five. I always enjoy it. I'm just not very good.
Oh, that's a shame. I'm sorry to hear that.
Bad.
Prayers for Joey Derso, please, in the chat. Thank you.
I think one of the fun things in that Spain game was the substitutes before the penalty shootout. Was it Pablo Sarabia came on?
What happened? Yeah, because Sarabia came on to take a penalty, which he subsequently.
Which is exactly what happened in the Euros final with England. With. Was it Saka and Sancho that both came on, or Rashford?
I think all three. Did all three of them come on?
I think one of them. I think Saka was already on the pitch. Anyway, two of them were subs and missed it. And it's that whole thing of like, no matter how good your stats are, no matter how good you are in training, no matter how many penalties you scored, surely it's hard to just. Martin Noble did it for West Ham against Man United in the Premier League not so long ago. If your first kick is a shootout, that must be terrifying.
Huge amount of pressure, I think, to put someone on.
You need to feel the ball. Like, you must have to get a feel of the ball. Even though it's different kicking the ball on the sidelines than the one on the pitch. I'm sure of it.
I also just think if you're brought on to take a penalty, it just ramps up the pressure of you taking that penalty, because the expectation is, well, we brought someone off who's worse at penalties than you, so that we can bring you who's better at penalties on. So you have to score this. And it just sort of... So Rabia's was the first penalty as well. And like the same with the Japan game yesterday, where the first penalty sort of set the tone for the rest of the shootout. Like, Japan missed two in a row, and then Spain promptly missed three, right? After Sarabia missed the first one.
There must be like stats on this. I mean, someone must have crunched the numbers. I just can think of several high profile cases where it's... And it kind of looks worse than if you just keep the... People remember it. Whereas if you just... leave the guy on who misses it, no one's kind of like, that was terrible management. But it's such an active thing to do that everyone, I don't know, I'm sure the
interesting thing is that we rarely see the Louis van Gaal move, which is bringing on a goalkeeper before a penalty shootout, and that worked out. And so I'm surprised we haven't seen more of that, because that's the sort of thing that would happen.
People, when did he do that?
When was that? 2000, Tim Krul, when he brought him on against Costa Rica. 2014?
And in the English,
chat will tell us when we're on.
Yeah.
You're going to be live dubbed.
And Chelsea, of course, with Sarri and Kepa, unsuccessfully tried to do it, and he refused to come off.
Yes. And then he saved the penalty, didn't he? Did he not win that penalty shootout, I believe?
Well, I mean, I think if you're relying on penalties, you've done something wrong anyway. But before we move on to talking about how these teams might need to do what and where in the next games or whatever, how... will the Spain team be remembered? Like, will they be remembered? Did they waste a big chance here?
That's an interesting question, because I feel as though the next time the World Cup swings around, you know, they've got a lot of players who are going to be very good. They're going to be in their peak. So your Gavis and your Pedris. Your Pedri.
Yeah, or just Pedri and Gavi.
Yeah. Your Pedris and your Gavis. And,
Or just Pedri.
Yeah, you're Pedri. Yeah. but they're going to be at their peak, right? And there's still a lot of great players in that squad who will still be around at that point, and they will develop more players. I suppose Luis Enrique might not be there, but the criticism I think that people will have of this team was that they were too structured, that they were playing positional play, and they didn't seem to have the sorts of flexibility that is required in order to break down lower blocks. And I suppose, you know, we always have these endless discussions about whether or not having a really simple game model is the best approach for a World Cup. And perhaps by now we've got to this point where we've recognized that, you know, the elite European style that we see in like Champions Leagues, which people expect to be the best way of playing football, maybe they aren't at this sort of level.
Well, this is an interesting question, isn't it? Because... we look at the teams are doing very well. They don't really have club managers in charge. So like England have got Gareth Southgate, who is definitely a tournament international manager, I would say right now. France have Deschamps, who is probably definitely the same thing. Germany's best manager they've had was Jogi Löw. And now, well, I guess the last two tournaments didn't work out very well either. So maybe I'm totally wrong. Fernando Santos, does he count as a club manager?
He's definitely an international tournament manager.
So there must be a difference in approaching a tournament as a tournament manager than there is as a club one.
Yeah, and you've got Luis Enrique, Hansi Flick has failed. Potentially, you know, Roberto Mancini as well. Obviously, they won the Euros, but they failed to qualify this time. And that's three big names. Are there any big name club managers still in the World Cup? Van Gaal,
Van Gaal feels different insofar as he feels like he's like an older
school. Yeah, he's sort of at the end of his career, whereas the other two are younger.
Should we just name more teams?
But I think there's definitely something in it, insofar as a lot of these coaches aren't particularly tactically complex or interesting, right?
Well, exactly. Like Leo Scaloni, Argentina, brand new basically to management. So, I mean, he's done a few things differently. You've talked about that and when an IRL video, John's done a video on how Argentina have evolved during this tournament alone. But it's not hugely complicated. It's very, that you can really see it if you're looking at it. Netherlands, I would say, there is quite a bit of tactical complexity and depth to it. And there's lots of very subtle movements that make the shape change a lot. And I wonder whether these things, like Van Gaal saying things like they play the same as Brazil, is that you said that? So John told me earlier that Van Gaal saying that Brazil play the same as Netherlands, but they get all the attention basically in Brazil. You know, Netherlands don't. But I wonder if it's just because he's done something really smart and like, well, I have noticed it. It's okay. But a lot of people maybe haven't. And so he's not getting the credit. So he needs to start putting things out. You know, I'm not saying it's the same thing. You know, how like a serial killer goes back to the scene of the crime and they
like Zodiac
start going like, oh yeah. I'm not saying Louis Van Gaal has committed murders. I'm not saying that.
I'm going to cut this bit out.
He's live.
Oh no, he's going to sue us.
Well, I'm saying he's not.
He's not. He's definitely not.
Yeah.
I would like to distance myself from all of these comments.
From the swirling allegations.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, it's like he's trying to let people know what he's doing, but he should do that at the end so people don't start looking into it too much and figuring all that sort of stuff out.
Before this World Cup, there was, a week? I mean, that's barely enough time to sort of have a nice bath and get on the plane to Qatar, isn't it? I mean, surely they would have had no time whatsoever to prepare complex, detailed, which is the kind of, I know you guys have spoken about this before, but complex attacking patterns and all that sort of thing that goes on at club level. I mean,
the relevant thing in talking about the games we've seen tonight, Portugal are going to play Morocco next, right? So that's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. What would they have to do, looking at what Morocco do, to try and beat them? Because Morocco, I'd imagine, will do similar things and try and play without the ball. And how do you break that down? Do Portugal have enough to be able to deal with the counterattacks?
Yeah, I think that there's two things. One of them is, like, can you break down that structure? And I think the easiest way of breaking down that structure is probably going to be playing at a higher tempo than Spain in terms of going direct when you win the ball in your own half. And I think Portugal can definitely do that. But as I said before, what I felt with Spain was that, yes, they're going to possess the ball well. They're going to get into nice areas of the pitch. They're going to be able to structure themselves nicely across the pitch. But they're just giving Morocco all the time in the world just to sit back in that block. Whereas I think with Portugal, they can turn the ball over and then try and get forward and beat Morocco back to their block. And if you can do that, then there'll just be much more space to be able to exploit. And then the other thing being that, as we've said, there's just a lot more fluidity in that Portuguese forward line. There's the space and freedom given to them to be able to change positions and pull players around a little bit. And if you can do that,
I wonder if they'll sell them a bit as well. Like, they'll maybe just have a deeper line. Yeah, to try and beat them out a bit. Like, in the second half, I think, maybe you watched it back, didn't you? Maybe I'm wrong. But I think Morocco pushed forward about 10, 15 metres, put the defensive line up so they weren't so close to their own goal. And that meant there's a little bit of space in behind. And that's when you saw Morata come on, because suddenly there's room in behind for Spain to get in behind that. And Portugal, I think this would be a game where they don't want to play Ronaldo, especially. Back to Ronaldo again. But that's definitely probably relevant, because you want pace in behind if they do play that high line. So that's one thing you might see. That's two teams. Morocco go through and Portugal go through. Yeah, that's it. It's weird that Spain are gone now. I really thought they were going to do a lot better than that. And Pedri's out. Was he one of the standouts in the tournament?
I don't think so. But again, the question is going to be, how much was he sort of shackled by that structural approach that Luis Enrique...
But he's one of the best ones at it, so he facilitates that. Him and Gavi are very good at nipping in and out. I mean, Gavi's not been quite as good as I think everyone says about it. I think Gavi's a very, very great player. I think Pedri's got the little... Je ne sais quoi.
The X factor.
Yes.
Was it tiki-taka?
I don't know. What is it?
Well,
my sort of less... tactically advanced brain sees it as, like, I don't know, just very similar to 2010 and a Spain team that passes another to death and that in that case won every game 1-0 and in this case failed to. Is that an overly simplistic comparison?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of them, well, definitely Guardiola, when labelled with the tiki-taka thing, say they don't like tiki-taka.
Why?
Because they don't want it to be like passing the team to death. It's meant to be so they've got control of the game so they can then dictate things the way they want to. But it does end up looking an awful lot like that, like tiki-taka. And Luis Enrique at Barcelona very much moved away from the style of football that he inherited and made it more counter-attacky. What you saw, like Neymar, Messi and Suarez would often stay quite high and they just get the ball into them in the channels really quickly and you just go. And so they were really good, Luis Enrique. They won the treble, didn't they? They won the Champions League, the Spanish Cup, I think. They're one of the best Barcelona sides. But because Guardiola set it up, you know, you think of him being the great architect. Enrique was phenomenal there.
I think when people use the phrase tiki-taka, it's usually used pejoratively as to this sort of sense that passing for the sake of passing, right?
Always never going forward.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There have been a few coaches who were accused of tiki-taka claiming that they don't like the phrase. I think Pep Guardiola's on record saying that he doesn't like the phrase. I don't think necessarily the issue here is the passing for the sake of passing. I think it's more the issue is that you end up sort of coming up against a block and you don't seem to have any solutions for it. Again, as we're saying, like, is the question, do you simply not have the time to work with this squad to be able to do the sort of intricate possession rotations that you need in order to be able to do that kind of thing? Or is it the case that actually the coaching hasn't been good enough for them to be able to solve those problems? Because I showed you before that rotation they did with Dani Olmo coming inside and Jordi Alba pushing up. That seemed to be all they really had as a solution to like a lower block. And I think like a team like Man City under Guardiola, he's just got a lot more flexibility because they've worked so long together on all of this stuff that he can just implement more solutions during the game to be able to kind of solve those problems.
Well, speaking of rotations, it's time for a break. And we're back, and we're going to talk about the two games coming up on the next live stream we're doing. This is Friday, which is Croatia versus Brazil and Netherlands versus Argentina. These are very exciting games.
Very exciting, isn't it?
I'm looking forward to them. Oh, yes. Are you looking forward to them?
I'm really looking forward to them. Good. I mean, Croatia are just kind of like glide. I sort of barely made an impression on the tournament so far, and they're in the quarterfinals. Is that fair?
Well, what do you think? Croatia versus Brazil? Who's going to win that? What do you think of this one?
Yeah, Brazil. But I mean, good about Croatia, are a wily, wily nation at this level, aren't they? I mean, they win games. They beat England 4 years ago. Brazil are better than England were 4 years ago. Yeah, Brazil will beat Croatia, I think.
It's a bold statement. We'll do our scores in a second for points are bad. That's coming up soon. Don't you worry.
I can see Netherlands beating Argentina, though.
Well, yeah, I think this is... So I think Netherlands versus Argentina is the box office smash, isn't it? Because Brazil have been like amazing fun to watch. They were so good in that last game. That goal that he scored, Richarlison.
Oh, yeah, with a little...
Yeah, the movement. So that's the kind of incisive passing that Spain couldn't offer, I think, against Morocco. It was the third man run, basically, just running over the balls. When it comes through, you've broken the line. It's really hard to do that. You can't really program teams. I guess you can train it a little bit.
It's just absolutely perfect, isn't it? Yeah. That symbiosis of, like, intent on the part of three players to just do the right thing.
You ever put on
right
a session
order
before where you get the centre forward to dribble ball his head first before you go into a third man
that's
run?
That's the first warm up that I do with my centre forwards. I'm like, right, we'll do the, what do they call it, the seal.
The
thing,
curse on the seal dribble.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
once
good.
Once you've nailed that one, you can do all the others, right?
So. It's ambitious. They didn't cover that in my SFA coaching courses, but maybe that's where Scotland are going wrong.
Mm.
We should be all dribbling with the head.
With the head. Keep it off those muddy pitches.
In Scotland, the head is the foot of the legs. That's what we call it. Anyway, so Croatia are all right. Brazil are probably going to win. Netherlands, Argentina, I can't call.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because the Netherlands' approach is to sit deep, absorb pressure, and then hit on the counter-attack.
And Argentina don't want to leave too much going forward. Although that's kind of how Saudi Arabia got them. Was them starting to push forward a little bit more. Actually, no, I would say more with Argentina and Saudi Arabia was the gap between the back line and the front line and no midfield. But I really don't know because you think Netherlands won't do anything different tactically, I wouldn't have thought. They'll play the same front three with rotations, Gakpo, Klaassen, and Memphis Depay. And they'll wait to hit with Dunsold and Fries on the right-hand side as an extra forward. And that'll be against Acuna at left-back against Argentina. So these won't put him forward, probably. Keep him level.
Yeah, I'm not sure. The thing with the Netherlands is that I felt that their game plan against the US was good, but they actually enacted it quite badly at times. Like, it felt like a lot of their attempts to break down the USA team through the counter were just not well enacted. So yes, I think they sort of finished very efficiently in that game, but against a better team, there's two things. One is, will they be better in defending those transitional moments? But the other one is, I felt like the US actually had quite a lot of joy going forwards, but they didn't have the players to be able to really exploit those moments as dangerously as they probably could. And obviously Argentina do have those players. So it's a question for me of like, how good are the Netherlands at making the most of those moments where they sit deep, absorb pressure, and then try and hit at speed? Because a very Spurs way of playing at the moment, isn't it? It's very Antonio Conte. You sit deep, you bait the opposition in, and then you win the ball back and then try and expand at speed. I'm just not convinced that the Dutch are actually as good defensively as maybe Louis van Gaal thinks. But I also don't think they're necessarily as good going forward as van Gaal thinks. I've got the quote, actually, that we mentioned before.
Oh, yes.
This is van Gaal. He said, "Brazil play the same football as us, counter football, starting from a compact defence. And my friends from the media say it's sparkling football, while we do the same. Our goal was much more beautiful than theirs. Ours was a team goal. 20 passes in high tempo."
It's like mind games.
It could be mind games.
A sort of Ferguson versus Wenger era.
Because the winner of Netherlands versus Argentina would go through to play the winner of
Brazil-Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah.
Wow. What a time to be alive.
It's big, isn't it? Brazil against Argentina as World Cup semi-final would be...
That's the game.
That kind of should be a final,
it would
really.
It would be amazing.
Good luck to the stadium security for that one. I mean, it's clearly... Those two are the biggest supported teams, aren't they, outside the Arab countries? And I mean, Morocco's crazy, them getting there. I mean, to state the obvious, it's a huge moment for all the Arab countries in a World Cup in Qatar. I mean, there's huge, so many fans there out supporting Morocco. It's kind of nice to see because, you know, I went to Qatar in July and I gave some videos for your brilliant long video there. And the accusation that Qatar is not an authentic football country is a very fair one, I think, in many ways. But, you know, people that have just popped on a short flight from Morocco and are now having a great time. I mean, good for them.
Yeah. I mean,
just for their flares and whatever else. I mean, it's nice, isn't it? Like, I mean, for example, with England, like, there's not that many fans there.
No, it does seem to be a slightly older crowd for the England fans.
An older crowd, well. Yeah. Definitely, very much so.
Well, good old World Cup. And speaking of good old things, you know what time it is? Points are bad. It's time for points are bad. So, Joey, you can't play this. But I would like it if you could, but you can't. So
yeah, I understand.
But I'm glad that you're here.
I'll observe.
Okay, so Joe has made a spreadsheet, or someone's made a spreadsheet that Joe has told me any, the point where we remember that I don't know how to do numbers. So what happened was that I had a bad day. So did Joe. We were both last on 9 points each. Mm. Because do we read out the scores that we got wrong? Do we read what they were?
I don't think so, but just say we were miles off on the Portugal.
Yeah, I said 0-0 for Portugal, and so therefore for that one, quite clearly I got 7 points. Yeah, I got many less because it was 6-1, so I got 7 points for one. Yeah, and then Joe got 6 for that. John, what did you get? You got 5 points for that one, and you got 3 points for Morocco v Spain because it was going to be 2-1 to Spain, and it was in fact 0-0. So what we're looking at here is a problem because me and Joe both go last. Joe's put his scores in already. So for Brazil Croatia, Joe has said it will be Croatia 1, Brazil 3.
Wow,
a high score, and then that means it's me. So I'm going to say Croatia 0, Brazil 2.
Yeah,
and that means that Seb, because he's not here, because it's Seb.
Did Seb not go last? He must have come first today.
No, you're joint with him.
Okay.
But it's in alphabetical order.
Okay.
So he goes first.
Yeah, Seb obviously comes before John. That's right.
Yes, reverse order.
Okay, nice.
So he wanted 2-1. Brazil 1, Croatia 2. What? That can't be right. He's gone rogue. Wait, that can't be right. He says Brazil 1, Croatia 2. That's what he's written down. A bold move by Seb Stafford Bluer. He's taking no prisoners here. That is...
to stand up for my bold brethren.
Bold, sorry. It's the vowel sounds. Bold move, I should say. A Steve Bold. Steve Bold move. And John, therefore, what would you say your score is for Croatia versus Brazil?
So Joe went 3-1. You went 2-0. Seb went 1-2. So I could go 2-1.
To
Brazil.
Brazil, okay. 2-1. I should tell everyone, because in case you don't know, the scores are very tight at the moment. At the moment, before I even put these scores in, because I put those in now. At the moment, it leaves what we've got. Joe is currently last.
Okay.
On 130. Then...
me.
John, 128. Then me. What? No. How is that? How did I get... I got the same... Oh, yeah, Seb got one less point than me. So Seb's got 123. I've got 124. And now we're on to the next part.
How many points have I got?
Joe is back for the podcast now. Joe has 130 points.
Oh.
So you are last still. But I have moved into second place.
I'm still last.
Yes, you're still last. But I do believe you've got good scores coming in, Joe. So now what we have...
What's the gap between Seb and Joe?
Seb and Joe. Seb's 123 and Joe is 130. Only 7 points.
7 points.
So if Joe were to do a 0-0 and it was a 7-0,
yeah,
it would be equal.
Hmm?
It's crazy. We're doing Netherlands versus Argentina now, Joe.
Has it been a good podcast?
It's been probably the best one. I actually prefer it when you're doing it.
You're like
been a mad
you're the Cristiano Ronaldo of this
tonight.
Podcast.
Yeah.
Has Jerry Durso been good? Sorry, I'm
Jerry Durso
very close
good,
to your
yes.
face. Has he been good? Yeah.
I've been thrown off. Here we go. So, Netherlands versus Argentina. Points are bad, Joe. You have said 1-1. A bold move. From Joe, bold.
Bold.
Yeah. Then I think I am next. And I say it'll be... Oh, I can't see 1-1 because it's done. I will say 0-1. A messy special. That means that Seb, in alphabetical order, goes next. And he says, Netherlands 2, Argentina 1.
Well, that's what I was going to go for.
Well, that's a shame because now you can't have it. What do you have, John?
I'll go the other way around. 2-1 to the Netherlands.
2-1 to the Netherlands.
I can have that, can't I?
Yes, I've put in Seb's score wrong. Hang on. No, he says Netherlands 2, Argentina 1.
Oh, right.
That's what you said.
I'll do the other way then. Argentina 2, Netherlands 1.
It's harder than it looks, isn't it?
The numbers bit is,
the
yeah.
The administration of points are bad.
Yeah, I really am struggling a little bit. So I think we've got the scores in now. Joey, I might as well ask you what you think your scores would be for Croatia versus Brazil.
1-0 Brazil.
1-0 to Brazil, he says. And Netherlands versus Argentina.
3-2 to the Netherlands.
See, that's a good score. He's trying to get some points in here. And there, that's it. That's points are bad. So we've covered points are bad and all the games. Joe's come in with some mad, been working since 11 a.m. 20 days ago energy. Here we go. It's good.
What?
You feeling all right?
But, yes, I was... Sorry, John. I'm right in your face. I was just, the chat said, is Joe drunk? Not drunk, just very, very tired. I was trying to type in the chat, but it turns out when you're not the admin, you can't just spam as many messages as you want. There's a timeout for how many you can send. So, but that was me. If you saw John McKenzie typing something in the chat, it was me. Just that one thing, though, not all the other things.
I would like to distance myself from all comments made under my name in the chat heading.
And you might want to distance yourself from my face as well. Yeah, yeah.
Because of all this non-sleeping. Yes. Well, there you go. It's a strange energy in the room to end the podcast. It's gone pretty weird.
Has it been like this the whole time?
No. It turned. That was good, though. Do you think?
Rooney!
There we go. We're back on track now. Right. So we've covered everything. Look, we've given you all the football that you needed, all the coverage. There can be no more. And we will return on Friday, I think, with Joe hosting again, because you'll be back and you won't be busy doing all stuff. And it'll be a lovely time. and you should come and watch it on the live stream, then listen to it on the podcast afterwards, and subscribe to The Athletic so you can read all Joey's articles. You'd like that, wouldn't you?
I'd love it.
There you go. See? Couldn't sell it harder than that.
Please, please.
Okay, good. Well, that's it. Thanks very much for listening, if you're listening on the podcast. Thanks very much for watching. We're now going to go home altogether. Goodbye.